and quality adjusted GDP. I like to call it gross national or gross domestic well-being. Now, we're a long way there yet, but I hope you get there, David. I'll be the first to stand up and applaud. Now, we ain't there yet. We're not even all that close, despite the progress. So the way I define healthcare provider productivity is on a resource-based approach, not an outcomes-based approach. Outcomes is really, really difficult. Resource is a lot more straightforward. And for this purpose, what you do is you take the same service, say an inpatient hospital, the same exact service in one measurement period and the next, and you try to make sure that the resources supporting that service are similar, you know, very similar. And then you look at the price change. That gives you the price, and then you look at the expenditure difference, take the price out of it, and you can get to a productivity measurement, how many of these were produced relative to the inputs that went into it.
And now, many of them may not be needed,
Possibly, right. I've had the pleasure of being in the hospital twice in the last 12 years, for one thing or another. And boy, they've got it down to an assembly line. They're pretty efficient in a lot of respects, not all, by any means. But the point is, for a Medicare system that pays based on resource use, resource intensity, measuring productivity through a resource-based calculation is the right way to do it. And Joe, I think you'd still agree with that. And someday we'll have a much better idea of the value of what we're getting, and we'll pay more for the value of what we're getting, but we're a long way from that.
I have sort of a different way of talking about this, and I want to just remind everybody that, you know, when the commission does its work, it doesn't have a formula and say, okay, here's the formula, and therefore the payment is this. You know, it considers a lot of different information, you know, out there. And this discussion of and we never said, okay, put a productivity reduction in for the rest of time, you know. But it certainly came up in our conversations in considering what to pay a provider. But it wasn't, and this is, I think we've had this conversation, it wasn't provider productivity. And there was never any attempt to say how much have the hospitals improved their productivity versus the physician, and let's pay on that basis. The concept was economy-wide, because the assumption worked like this. Everybody who's paying for this is being forced to improve their productivity this much. Shouldn't, as a payer, or as a public payer, we come to providers and say, why not you? And then, as a matter of judgment, if you have to move off of that, you move off of it. But the first question is these productivity improvements are being extracted from the people who are paying. Why not the people who are getting the payment? And so there was never this attempt to say, I'm going to measure productivity for hospitals versus physician, because we think that's real difficult and is fraught with lots of problems. And the concept, when we had these conversations, was really a different concept altogether. Right or wrong, but
well, I think productivity is a difficult issue to kind of get your head around in some ways. I mean, I'm sure when David Cutler makes his acceptance speech for his Nobel Prize, he will point out, of course, that something that just measures the cost per unit of producing stuff, but doesn't actually take into account whether people want the stuff and how they want the stuff, is not a really good way of measuring productivity. That you've got to take into account how people as individuals value what they get. The snag with that, of course, in our health system is that, unlike a lot of other parts of our economy, people don't see the value that they perceive compared with some cost that they perceive that is actually the cost of production. And therefore, when they react to policy changes, proposals, they see it as a change in value to them related to a cost that bears no relation. It may not even be a cost to them. And so the way they react to political proposals is reflected by that. So productivity as a driver of sound public policy, where the public, particularly the elderly public, is involved, doesn't sort of seem to get you very far, which is unfortunate, but nonetheless a fact of life.
I have time for another question. How about over here?
Susan Reinhart, AARP Public Policy Institute. I'm wondering about the discontinuity between publicly subsidized insurance under ACA for those under 64 and publicly subsidize insurance under Medicare for those over 65, where at least it appears that the former is more generous than the latter, and whether that would spark more debate, sharpen the discussion on coverage and beneficiaries' role?
I think from the perspective of those who worked on the ACA, there was a recognition that there was potentially a cliff for those becoming eligible for Medicare, but something that the Congress would have to take up and deal with at a later date. But yes, there's a recognition that that will be the case, given the generosity. I mean, arguably, some will say less generous than others in the ACA compared to the Medicare savings programs and the levels of eligibility and the amount of subsidy.
There's you didn't mention it, but there's also a corresponding cliff for people on Medicaid because of the more generous eligibility standards under age 65 only.
Well, and also between those who have employer-based coverage and essentially have a tax exclusion subsidy as opposed to get direct subsidies in the exchange, there's plenty of cliffs all around. I would just observe, of course, that the marketplace mechanism that we now have does presume that you provide a certain amount of money to people and let them be the decider in terms of which plan meets their particular subjective and objective kind of criteria. So it is going down a road, which I think is, to me, makes sense in the sense of all the alternatives of going towards some form of defined contribution model. And I would like to see the same universally within the Medicare system.
So we're very close to lunch, but if someone's got a very short question that can be answered in one or two words, Len? Yes, no?
So, Stuart, you did, as usual, a marvelous job making us all believe that premium support can be warm and fuzzy. And I guess my short question is, how come that opinion's not so widely shared inside the Beltway? And I would just pose my answer, which is, there's never been a particular premium support proposal put forward that had a growth rate the Democrats would find acceptable. Are you prepared to do that in your new Center for Innovation?
Well, I think you actually are correct on that. I mean, the debate within the Beltway is really focused on how fast do you grow. They may not say it that way, but it's also, you know, who's going to share this cost? Can Granny afford it? That sort of thing. And I think that I tried to lay that out in the chart by saying there are competing goals. And if you do something which is generous enough in terms of an individual to feel, well, I'm fine with this, I'm comfortable, and phone up their congressman or text their congressman and say, yeah, I'm for this, then you're probably not going to hit your budget goal. You just probably aren't. So it's going to be a continuous kind of struggle over those competing goals. I just don't think, I mean, so I guess the answer is yes, right? I'm not sure what the question was, but yes.
on that
no. Sorry.
No. That was no.
No, okay, all right. Well, that lesson comes to no.
Well, yeah, I want to thank the panel.
Right. We're done.